At midnight on January 6, 2006, the Australian government made it illegal for Australian residents to use the phone, fax or email to discuss the subject of euthanasia. Why? In 1995, the then Chief Minister of the Northern Territory of Australia, Marshall Perrin, put a private members' bill forward to make euthanasia legal for persons within the Northern Territory. 1 year later, the bill became law, and the Territory became the first place in the world to legalise voluntary euthanasia. In September 1996, the bill was used for the first time, and a man named Bob Dent voluntarily ended his life by lethal injection. A further three people used the method, and the demand was increasing. An Australian doctor, Dr. Philip Nitschke, had developed equipment which could satisfy legal requirements and administer a legal euthanasia injection. This meant a person could voluntarily end their life without assistance from others. The machine required the user to answer questions before they could press a further button which would deliver a lethal delivery of Nembutal. However, the law came to a screeching halt when the Rights of the Terminally Ill Act 1995 was overturned by another Australian parliamentarian, Kevin Andrews. He too put forward a private members' bill. His aim was to overturn the original bill. His bill was successful. The end result was euthanasia again became illegal. I spoke with Marshall Perrin. Marshall Perrin, your success in being able to get that private members' bill up in the Territory and then to have Kevin Andrews overrule it with his private members' bill, do you think it was religion that won out in the long run?
Absolutely, without question, that Kevin Andrews and the band of supporters that he gathered in federal parliament, including members from all the political parties, but certainly the Liberal Party and the Labor Party were very heavy in his campaign, religiously based campaign, to overturn the Territory legislation. Sadly, that group of people were successful with their strategy.
Would you put a bill like that up again if you could?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm pleased to say that even reviewing the legislation today, sort of almost less than a decade since it was passed, to say what would you change about it if you were going to introduce it again tomorrow, and there's almost nothing that I would change anyway. Others may feel differently. I think it was a very good piece of legislation that sort of covered all the bases, as it were, and would be a model for someone to use elsewhere.
On a personal level, how did you feel when your bill was vetoed?
Well, I was just devastated, shattered, disappointed, angry. There was nothing I could do about it. I knew that once federal parliament had voted for it, not by very much in the Senate, mind you, only about four votes in the Senate tipped it over. In the House of Reps, the vote was stronger against us. But it had to get through both houses, and the Senate was our last hope, where the senators, we would hope, would support the states' rights issue as distinct from voluntary euthanasia. The federal parliament shouldn't be overturning state parliaments. And that's basically what they did, even though we were a territory. They actually just overturned what a democratically elected parliament had already done. And that made me really angry, because I knew that it was sort of the end of the road. There was nothing else I could do to reverse it, other than become an activist, which I am, to advocate that similar legislation should get passed in any of the Australian states, because the federal parliament can't interfere then.
Is voluntary euthanasia a human rights issue?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. It's about the individual autonomy that we each should have when we are on our deathbed, basically, that we ought to be able to determine the timing and manner of our own death. That's what it's all about.
Do you think there is a strong groundswell nationwide to have this human rights access for everyone?
Across the country, without any doubt whatsoever, there's a roughly 75% support for voluntary euthanasia legislation. Sadly, although that has been the case for quite some years now, we can't quite get the politicians to take notice of that 75%. They all seem to think that they are holier than thou and somehow they know best.
Do you think that the voluntary euthanasia bill is about to rear up strongly within the next election?
No, I don't think it will. I think the major parties have the ability to control the election agendas. The taxation issues, health issues, education, all of the issues you see the Howard and the Leader of the Opposition talking about on the paper in the news every day today, they will be the issues, the economy, taxation. They'll be the issues that feature prominently in the coming federal election. It's almost impossible to get an issue like voluntary euthanasia up on the agenda nationally. You can get it covered in small areas of the media. Small localised areas around the country will cover it, but it will not gain anywhere near the strength needed to actually determine the numbers in the Federal House.
Since then, Dr. Nitschke has campaigned heavily to have euthanasia re-established. He started Exit International, an organisation for people to communicate and network on euthanasia. Nitschke also commenced workshops for people who were seeking information on end-of-life choices. Philip Nitschke. Philip Nitschke, thank you for speaking with NIM FM.
Well, thank you.
Philip, what's, in your opinion, what is voluntary euthanasia?
Well, it's come to mean in society today the idea that people can have some degree of control over their end-of-life choices, that they might be able to pick the time, and I suppose to a lesser degree the manner of their own death, and it's usually seen in the context of serious illness. In other words, a way in which people who are seriously ill can decide that they've had enough and peacefully end their lives.
What is the current political stance on voluntary euthanasia?
Well, because it involves giving people the chance to be able to end their lives, there's total opposition to it. From, in fact, both major parties are refusing to in any way engage in this issue. So we have the Conservatives and the Labor Party not wishing to go down this path. Well, there are some individuals within each party who have been supportive, of course, but the majority of the politicians simply will not engage in this. Now, that's different for Greens and Democrats, where they've been much more in favour of the idea of introducing a law which would allow you, if you satisfy certain prerequisites and criteria, that you're seriously ill, you've had your palliative care options explained, you're not depressed, and all the rest of it, if you satisfy those criteria, then you can get lawful help to die. And that's what we briefly had in the Northern Territory, which is the first place in the world to ever have it legal to help a person in that situation to die. That's been overturned by the federal government, and there's no likelihood that any state government or federal government of Australia, at least, is going to go back down that path.
Is it a regular thing for people to make contact with you to discuss their method to die?
Oh, very much so, because, I mean, having, in a sense, had that experience of 8 months in the Northern Territory when it was possible, and, of course, everyone in Australia knew what was happening, it created quite a need. I mean, many people now know what is possible. They're annoyed that the politicians simply don't have the courage to visit this area, but they still want to know what's available to them now, and so I get contacted all the time. People say, look, I want to know what drugs I can get, so that if I take them, I'll have a peaceful death. And you really need to know, it's quite a specialised area, you need to know about the issue. If you want to have reasonable control, people don't want to take chances, they don't want to make a mistake. They want to know that if they do take anything to put an end to their suffering, that it will work. And so that kind of issue is one of the reasons people's need for that information, that people come along to these workshops that we run in increasing numbers.
Where are these workshops and what do you teach?
Well, we have to tread a pretty fine line, because to advise or to counsel or to assist someone to suicide in Queensland is life imprisonment, in New South Wales is 20 years jail. So it's a serious crime, even though suicide is not a crime at all. So it's quite a paradox. So we have to be very careful at these workshops. So we say we are not encouraging people to suicide at all, but what we are doing is answering their questions, making sure they know, they have access to accurate information, so that they know that if they do that or do this or whatever, that they will be able to know that they will have a peaceful death. In other words, we're empowering people through giving them the knowledge they need. That's not encouraging them to suicide. Many people, when they find out the answers to their questions, they move away from that option. It's just making sure that people have accurate access to the factual material they need.
It sounds to me as though it lands in the human rights court.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think that the fact that we are, our society or our governments at least, have gone to great lengths to make sure people simply don't have access to the information they need to have this degree of control, is something which is hard to explain. I mean, it's a fundamental, I think, a fundamental human right to decide when or not your life is seriously unsatisfactory and that you should have the choice to be able to put an end to it. It's only your choice, no one else's. Now, to deny people that right, which is what we do, we say, well, you can't have that right, you can do everything else, but you will not allow you to be able to have the information or access to the drugs or whatever to be put up to put an end to it, is a crime, and yet that's what our society does.
In the workshops, people attending, are you saying that at the end of it, they have an idea of how to be able to end their own life?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, we go down that... We talk... It's not just about that. We talk about depression. We talk about palliative care. So people understand... And we talk about the law, of course, so people know exactly the background in which this fits. But then, of course, we talk about drugs. We talk about non-drug methods, plastic bags, carbon monoxide, things like that. When people leave the workshops, they've got a pretty clear idea about what does provide access to peaceful death, what doesn't. We then run a more advanced several workshops, so-called construction workshops, when people will actually go to the process of developing something for themselves, some way that they might themselves use. Because the point is that while suicide is not a crime, and if you do everything yourself, you're not breaking the law. So that's why people want to come along and learn what it is they have to do. And it's far better they do that while they're well. The average age coming to workshops is 75. They're not young people, but mostly they're well. And it's better that you do it while you're well, rather than leaving it till you become quite sick, because then, of course, it's too late off, and you then have to ask your son or your daughter or your husband or wife to go out and perhaps help you, and that's when you get into serious legal trouble, because people that are helping are committing serious crimes. And so we try to make sure that people think ahead, prepare themselves, find out what they need to know, come to workshops, and then they can put themselves into a position where they really do feel that they're empowered. And they know that, well, if things get too bad, they at least have got a way to a peaceful death. People live longer when they've got that knowledge. They feel like they're back in control.
What is the peaceful pill?
Well, it's a metaphor, I suppose. It's a concept, but basically it's something that you build yourself, like you out of common, easy to obtain ingredients, you put it together in the kitchen, and you know that when you take that, it will give you a peaceful death. Now, we've been working on it for a long time, because obviously if you do it yourself, if you get the ingredients, if you put it together, manufacture it yourself, knowing that if you take it, you'll get a peaceful death. No crime, no law is broken. Of course, you've got to know how to do it, and it's got to exist. And so we've been working on various, if you like, models for the peaceful pill. There are drugs that you can get which are that good, but they're very, very hard to get. This is a sort of a do-it-yourself, a drug that you make yourself, which is as good as the best drug, which is Nembutal, and very hard to get. So this is a way, of empowering yourself in a way which doesn't break any laws.
What is the Canadian plastic bag?
Well, when people have had trouble getting access to, I mean, it's true that the drugs which give a peaceful death are very hard to come by, and people say, well, what else can I do? Do I have to use drugs? And the answer is no. I mean, surprisingly, perhaps, and people often don't like the thought of this, and I can understand that, but actually a plastic bag, if you put a plastic bag, put your head into a plastic bag and have it around your neck, not tight, just around your neck loosely, you breathe very easily, but the oxygen drops inside the bag, and surprisingly, perhaps, it's a peaceful death. Some people think it's not very aesthetic, and I can understand that. They don't like the thought of the plastic bag, but it is not, it's not a macabre, frightening, dreadful death associated when you can't breathe. That's something like something that stops you physically or mechanically breathing is terrifying. This is not like that. People breathe easily, the oxygen level drops, and they go to sleep and die.
The introduction of the 2006 law has forced Dr. Nitschke to take part of his work out of Australia and into New Zealand. The political arm of Exit International still exists within Australia, but the end-of-life counselling and workshops can only be run in New Zealand.